Having spent time speaking about the dignity of St. Joseph as we learn it from the scriptures and what we can derive from the scriptures themselves, and that particular part of the dignity that we have of how he is a perfect imitator of Jesus Christ, I wanted to bring up another point of St. Joseph that is best brought up in that prayer we just recited together before this talk began, the prayer to St. Joseph the Worker. It was St. Pius X who had composed that prayer. He had a deep love for St. Joseph, but also as a worker. If you know anything about the life of St. Pius X, before he became the Pope, and even before he was the Archbishop and things of that nature, he lived and labored in a poor area of Italy where everyone worked by their hands, and he often proposed to people amidst all the struggles that they had that St. Joseph could be their model and patron for them. And he had composed this prayer at that time while he was a parish priest to encourage other people, and he gave it to them to say so that they could have those words in their heads thinking about St. Joseph and working rather than, well, what other things that can occupy our minds when we're feeling sorry for ourselves as we're laboring and working, where everybody seems to be saying and doing things against us. At that particular time in history, the Freemasons were greatly at work, the beginning areas of the socialists and the communists, and they were trying to influence people in working and their labor and working and things of that nature. And Pope Pius X, as a parish priest, and then he was a bishop and so forth, and then as the Pope, was proposing St. Joseph as our patron and model in all that we do for labor. And that prayer is such a beautiful manner. The very first time I heard it years ago, it struck me as being the one prayer that sums up everything of how it is that we're supposed to work. And St. Joseph is our great and model patron in this whole point of labor. You know, very, very little is said about St. Joseph in the scriptures. We'll all admit that. But when it comes time to the points of labor, even then, very little is said. We draw from one little snippet in the scriptures of the working life of St. Joseph, and from that little bit, we put together everything we understand of the spirit of St. Joseph, how he worked, how he labored, and how we are to imitate the style of labor of his so that our works can be truly beneficial, especially beneficial toward our eternal life, toward merit, and accomplish all the things that are there. And here's where that snippet comes from. From the Gospel of St. Matthew. Jesus had gone forth and had started to preach, and he returned into some of the synagogues in the smaller towns and the areas in Israel. And each time as he left from these synagogues and teaching, especially one that he got to close to Nazareth area, people were amazed at just how much learning that he had, the wisdom of his words. What Jesus taught, what he said, touched the hearts of these people. When he spoke of the writings from the prophets or the things that had come forth, gave an exposition, an explanation, if you will, of something from the writings of the prophets of the Old Testament that they would often do in their synagogue services. They were amazed at the clarity of his words. And as he got closer to Nazareth and teaching, the people were not only amazed by this, but they also knew him. Because it's not too far-fetched to think that St. Joseph, being the laborer that he was, and that the work that he had done would have been well known, and at times, even in areas there, his work had been, it's probably spread to others about the good work that he had, of his son there, Jesus, who helped him there and took care of things, and of Mary, who was there, who was a good, loving example for a whole family life, and all these things would have been said. And so in one of the synagogues near Nazareth, as Jesus has finished his exposition on the scriptures, the people started to wonder, and they said, how did this man come by wisdom? Where did he get all of his smarts, we would say today? Where did he get his brains? Where did he get his learning? And how about these miracles we're seeing him working here? How did he get the power to do that? He's just a simple man. Is he not the carpenter's son? That's it. That's all we know of St. Joseph and the work that he did. Jesus is the carpenter's son, the carpenter. So obviously St. Joseph at least had some form of a reputation for being good at the work that he did. But it's a labor with hands. It's not a glorious thing. Jesus didn't go to the rabbinical schools to study. He worked right next to his foster father, skilled in labor, deeming it an honor to employ and to develop, as the prayer says, by the labor of his own hands, the gift that he had in his human nature to fashion these particular things. It was an honor to work in that particular way, not a drudgery, not something that he complained about, but it was an honor to do. So St. Joseph had the reputation of being the carpenter. And Jesus was the carpenter's son. That's it. That's all that we know of the labor of St. Joseph, but it's enough. It's enough in two areas here, because, again, to be known as the carpenter means his reputation must have spread around. Also, as the scriptures tell us, he's a just man. The just man does everything well. That means when St. Joseph labored, he did all of his work well. He didn't put things off. He didn't do it in a shoddy way. He did the duty he'd accomplished and did it well. And he did it well because he did it for the love of God. That's what we're going to see as we continue with our understanding here about St. Joseph and his working and his labor. So from that one point, that little snippet in the line of St. Matthew's Gospel, we understand everything we do about St. Joseph as a laborer and a pattern for you and I in labor. When we start talking about work that we all do, labor that must be done, we can approach it, well, several different ways, but I want to approach it in two different points so we can understand the work that we do and how we need to accomplish it in the same spirit in which St. Joseph would have done it, in the same spirit in which Jesus Christ would have worked, the same spirit in which Mary would have worked, the same spirit in which all the saints of God, New Testament and Old, would have worked, and how you and I are supposed to work too when we labor. Let's get this out of the way too right away before we get into it about labor. Labor does not necessarily mean this strenuous type of thing of like digging ditches or building things or whatever to the point that sweat is just coming down from us. Any type of work that you and I do, any work we accomplish, whether it's around the house, whether it's schoolwork that students have, whether it's working in the garden, anything of that nature, anything that we do by the talents that God has given to us, whether it's extremely physical or it's the work of the mind, whatever it might be, it is all under the aspect here of labor, of work, of something that God has given to us, a talent in our human nature, to be able to accomplish a particular task. Or, like in the case with students in school, how to learn more, how to accomplish tasks here, to build up the disciplines, to learn, to develop character, develop study, and then from that particular point to go out into the field of labor and use those talents, all the things that have been learned all this whole period of time in school and at home, in the great way, be able to use them in a fitting way, as a Christian should. So that being said now about labor, what we understand about it, we want to talk about the subject of sanctification of that labor. How to actually make it holy. Because when it all comes down to it, we have the greatest opportunity for merit in this life by using our talents well, by using them for God and his greater honor and glory, even though it may not seem like it at the time. Someone can work in their house, in the house or on the house, whatever else it might be, and it may not seem that they're accomplishing great things for the salvation of souls, but they are, if they do, as that prayer to St. Joseph says, to work with order, peace, moderation, patience, without ever shrinking from weariness and difficulties, to work above all with a pure intention, which means for the love of God, detached from myself, no complaining. No, that's the spirit that we have. So we can take the simple words that you've got. You've got to feed the animals. You know, they do the dog and the cat or whatever. You know, wash the dishes, study for school, build things, go to work and accomplish other great works. It's all the same before God in this sense. There is no work that is greater, higher or lower before God if everyone who works, works for the love of him. If everyone who accomplishes all their tasks, whatever they might seem to be, and if somebody complains, oh, my work doesn't mean much, I'm not like some other people who are out here working and doing all these things here. No, the Christian who understands that his labor has been given to him, the talent to work, has been given to him by God to accomplish things for God, and then when I work with order, peace, moderation, patience, I'm gaining merit for myself, a higher degree of glory in heaven, and I'm winning graces to help other people, because that's what this whole doctrine of the mystical body is all about. And when we understand that, we see that labor is truly a wonderful thing. To be able to work the smallest task to the greatest, or the one that is recognized by the entire world before God, like I said, they are all the same if they are done in this way. Before men they may be different, but before God they are the same, because even the slightest task done with great love brings great merit, brings many graces. That smallest task accomplished with order, peace, moderation, patience, like St. Joseph surely had done, will do wonderful things for us. So here's how we sanctify our labor. Here's how we develop that spirit about us, that when we work, we have this intention. This is what's in my mind. Not groaning and complaining. I had to get up early to do this. I've got so many other things I have to do. You know, I was told to do this, and my mom and dad were angry, or whatever. All these things that occupy my mind, and that makes it, while I'm working, a real labor. Where, on the other hand, if I had a better intention with it, yes, it would still be a lot of work. But where there is love, the scriptures tell us there is no labor. We want to do it instead of, I have to do it. Big difference right there. And it's all in the way we sanctify it. And there's two ways we approach it. We see work as a penance, or we see it as a chance to glorify God. And here's how it's all developed. I don't know, and it's never been revealed, and I haven't read much about it in the lives of the saints, but I don't know how work or labor was accomplished by Adam and Eve before the fall. One thing I do think, from everything gathering things together and what some of the saints have said on the topic, is that before the fall, the labor that Adam and Eve did would have been really quite easy. There would have been order already in the Garden of Paradise, and so things would have been ordered rightly and well. There wouldn't have been some of the great struggles that we have to do to accomplish things, to do things, to make things fit, to make things work. Have to battle the elements of the weather and so forth. You know, that I'm quite sure of. It wasn't there. But exactly what took place, I don't know. But this one we do know from the scriptures. That when Adam and Eve sinned, disorder came to the entire world. And it changed the whole nature of labor. It changed everything. And it changed it by God's decree. And that's what's important here to understand. This is where the theology, the doctrine of labor, has come down from even the Old Testament times, that is supposed to govern the way you and I look at labor. In the Old Testament times, and I think maybe to some degree in our times today, but particularly Old Testament times, and even through earlier times in the New Testament, earlier times of the Christian era, the notion of labor, working with your hands, was considered in some societies as beneath what people should do. that it was truly something for the slaves, the servants, to do. Everybody else would go out and, well, eat grapes and listen to music and walk here and do that there. And that's all they would do, because it was below their dignity to labor, to work. Those are the unbelievers. They didn't know any better. They didn't understand man's dignity God gave him to use his talents and work. Well, they also didn't understand what happened in the Garden of Paradise when Adam and Eve sinned and that disorder came. As Adam and Eve were walking away out of the Garden of Paradise before the gates were shut, and after God had already told the devil in the form of the snake that a woman would come to crush his head, he said to Adam and Eve, and you can imagine them walking away as they're listening to this from God, "Cursed is the earth and thy work. In labor and toil shalt thou eat thereof all the days of thy life. In the sweat of thy brow shalt thou eat bread, till thou return to the earth out of which thou wast taken. Cursed is the earth and thy work." From that line is where I can say, you start to think, before the fall, when there was so much order in society, work was no labor. There must have been something there where everything just came together. I don't know what it is, don't have, because I've never experienced it. I can't even think of it, how it would happen. But I do know this from what the scriptures tell us, that after the fall, labor, I mean, to be able to do things, to accomplish things in the earth, now was going to mean work. Now was going to mean labor. "In labor and toil shalt thou eat thereof all the days of thy life. In the sweat of thy brow shalt thou eat bread, till thou return to the earth out of which thou wast taken." Here's what we understand then about labor, the work that you and I do. Here's what we understand. It's a duty. It's a duty imposed on us because of sin. The sin of Adam and Eve, original sin, the disorder that came into the world as a result of that, but also by our own personal sins, the disorder that we bring into our own lives when we've sinned. Labor is a duty. It's a duty that God gives to us. And we're supposed to accept all the difficulties that come with labor. We're supposed to accept them with a peaceful heart, a calm mind, a loving spirit. We're supposed to accept them because these difficulties are attached to our work because of sin. So this is the one idea, the first notion of how we sanctify our labor. First of all, recognizing that the work you and I do, no matter what it is, the work that we do is supposed to be a penance. It is supposed to be. We have a society today that is doing everything it can to escape from labor and the works of labor. This is where some of the hardships, the hard things that ever came in the mechanized age, when man started to be the chief one who did the labor and machines started to do it. And yes, machines can help us to accomplish things to be done. Some people will say machines make more work than they should be out there because all the repair that's got to be done on them. But if we ever get to a society where machines so totally take over life and we become like the pagans of old, that it's up to machine to do all this work. We've got a robot to go sleep my floor, a robot to rake the bed, a robot that can make my dinner, a robot that can drive me here. The car will just drive itself and I have to worry about these things. If we ever get to that point, we're going to be in a sorry state. There are people who are working toward that and say that's the advancement of man, the glory of man, all the good things that will be accomplished there once man does not have to work. But man is supposed to work. It is a duty imposed upon him from the beginning. And if man ever ceases to work because machines have taken over, where will he do the penance for his sins? God will choose other forms of bringing that penance to man from which they will rebel too. So while we have the time to labor here, This is the time that we use it, and we use it and understand it well here. Labor, work is imposed upon us as a point of penance. But that's not the only reason for labor. If we only looked on work and labor as being something that's penitential, so that means, okay, I have to do it. God's imposed it on me. This is what must take place. It's a penance for my sins. I've got this ball and chain around my ankle. Well, it's not a really big ball and chain because I know I'm supposed to work. God's imposed it. I'll obey. But yet, nevertheless, human nature is going to struggle and worry about it and things like that because labor is supposed to be a penance. Labor is supposed to be something that is done only because of sin. And if that's what we think of, no. Because if labor was only imposed upon us by God because of sin, only at that particular point it's imposed upon us, then, yes, we would be accomplishing one particular part of God's will, but we don't see the whole sanctifying part of what labor can do. Because, you know, when it comes down to it, if labor is done by all men in reparation for sin, then why in heaven's name did Jesus work? Why? He did not sin. It'd be blasphemy to think so. Why did Mary work? Why did St. Joseph, the just man, work? These were holy people, the holiest of all in Jesus Christ himself. He did not need to work to make up for sin, to make reparation for sin. So there must be something else to it then that helps us to understand about this command to labor, that when I get weary by the thought that I have to be working in reparation for sin, I can turn my mind and heart to this thought that will raise me up even more and encourage me in my labors, no matter how difficult they might be. And that is, God has given me the talent to work for his honor and glory. I am his creature, after all. I must work for him. I show my best way of loving him, proving my service to him, when I work and work well in order, peace, moderation, patience, without ever shrinking from weariness or difficulties. To add to what that prayer says, with detachment from self, having always before my eyes the hour of death and the things that I must accomplish of time ill spent, of talents unemployed, of good set before me but undone, and the worst of all, my empty pride in success, empty pride, because it's so fatal to the work of God. I have success in my labor, and I count it to myself. God gave me that talent. I need to honor him by it. And that's why I labor, and that's why I do my work well. I don't do my work well so that I can be seen by other people. I don't do my work well for the point of getting a raise at work or getting a gold star on my paper in school. I don't do my work well, my chores around the home, so I can get a candy bar or something like that from my parents. I do my work because God wants me to do it, and I do my work well because God wants me to do it. And I show my best form of love and service of him when I work in such a way that I use my talents, I use them well. I don't shrink from weariness or difficulties. I don't take personal pride in what I've done so that God has no credit in it. I sanctify my labor in this point. In this way, we are profitable in our labors. Okay. Principle of capitalist labor that's come upon us ever since the Protestant Reformation. Capitalist labor was not known before in the world until the Protestants came along. The principle of capitalist labor. All of our work must yield a profit. Okay. It works in a society in which we live. It can at times make people work maybe unjustly for that dollar, that profit. But there's something there that we can understand. That principle about it here, that when Jesus says in the scripture, when we have done all the things that we are set to accomplish, I have to say I'm an unprofitable servant. Unprofitable. Even after I've done all the things I'm supposed to do. And why am I unprofitable? Because I'm only doing what I've been told to do. To have profit in my labor, I have to take it to another level. Go over and above that which why I'm just told to do. I have to do my homework. Well, if I get a C, that's good enough. It's passing. No. Use my talents well. Make the efforts to study well. Be profitable in that way. Not profitable to pride, profitable to saying, God gave me this talent. I know I can use it. I will use it well for His honor and glory and to gain graces for other people. There's my profit. If I just have this humdrum idea in the work that I do and just say I'm going to do this just to get by, God give me the strength to work my 9 to 5 and get home and then I can sit down and relax, and I don't have a profit to show from it because I went through the entire day waiting to end the day instead of saying, weariness, difficulties, yes, I know they're here. But God gave me this talent and I will work as best as I can. And in that sense, our work is profitable. But you know, it's profitable in another way too. When others around us who don't have that same spirit of working, when they see us working in that way, it can actually lift them up. It can encourage them. Work at home, school, labor of any kind at any job. This is what they call work ethic. The work ethic here is I am here to work. I am here to work well. I am here to do what I'm supposed to do. I'm being paid in a job to accomplish these things. I will give an honest day's work for an honest day's pay. I will do that. No complaining, no grumbling. I will do that. That's what they call work ethic. And people can see when somebody has a good work ethic. Ethic meaning the moral principle behind why I'm working, my goal, my understanding of why I'm working here. Bad work ethic is where people are there to get the most out of their employer, to steal from them, to waste time, to expect to be paid, but not to put enough time into it for that pay. That's a very poor work ethic. It's a poor work ethic around the home. When children are told by their parents to do something, oh, do I have to now? Clean my room? What do you mean by that? I can't do that now. I haven't had time to have fun yet. That's poor work ethic. We have to change that. Our duty, our responsibility. We are here to accomplish them. But again, if we only do them just because we got them, get them done. Child is told by a parent, go clean your room. Go clean my room and come out. That's it. Instead of taking the time and order and patience to do it well, we can say and look in there and say, well, it's cleaner than it was before. But it's not as clean as it should be. And it could be if effort was put into it. We're unprofitable. We've done what we were told to do. But we're unprofitable. We're here to profit before God in all of our labor, and this is what St. Joseph here is our model and guide in this way. In order to make our work meritorious before God, to have merit, you know, merit, it's that treasure in heaven, you know? This is why you and I are on this earth, is to gain treasure in heaven. We cannot build up that treasury unless we put something into it. It's like a savings account. Everybody wants a savings account, saving for retirement, whatever. Fine. It does not magically appear when someone comes to retire and say, well, I've worked, it should be there. No, we've actually got to put into it. We've got to work toward it. And merit in heaven means the degree of glory, the degree of happiness that you and I will have in heaven. Everyone who gets to heaven will be happy. Understand that point. But God wants us to be even more happy, if you can understand that. He wants us to have a higher degree of happiness. He wants to give more, reveal himself more to us, because in this life we have merited it more. We have put more into that spiritual bank account up there, that when I die, it makes me worthy to come closer in heaven. Jesus said about heaven, in his Father's house, there are many mansions. We want the one that's closer and closer and closer to the throne of God. Even though everyone in every mansion in heaven is happy, there was even more happiness in heaven if we have more merit. That's why St. Therese of Lisieux, she understood this point of merit. It's part of her little way. She says, I would rather spend my life on earth gaining the merit of one Hail Mary said well to add more merit for me in heaven than to die right now and to be at peace with God right now. If that's what God wishes, that I die now, fine. But if not, I'm not going to say I want to die now and end this life and all the troubles and miseries and all that particular point. No. If I can gain the merit of one more Hail Mary said well, that's what I want to do. She understood this treasury in heaven. She understood that a simple prayer said lovingly gained the great, you know, just added more merit into that spiritual bank. More was put into it. To use the language of the day in the corporate world, that we'll cash in, if you will, when we die. And the work that you and I do on this earth can gain merit for us, can add to that, if, only if, we work well. We work for spiritual profit. We're wasting our time every day. If you and I go to work to accomplish things, and we do not do the work that we should do for the simple point of the love of God. This is why the prayer, the morning offering, has been given to us. It started out, I'm sure it was probably in some particular point of spirituality for centuries, but more particularly in this mechanized age and the work of man, the glory of man and his work and all these things that the communists and the socialists started to gather. To combat that, to keep our eyes on the spiritual effort of labor, we make this morning offering, the very beginning of the day. I give to God all my thoughts, words, actions, joys, and sufferings of this day, united with his sufferings, so the infinite merits of Jesus Christ himself, the merits gained by the Blessed Virgin Mary, the merits of every holy sacrifice of the Mass offered in this world. I unite with all those good things that I will do my works of this day for the love of God and his greater honor and glory. There's the key to merit. Okay, I have to get up, I have to go to work, I have a job I need to accomplish. I must go to school and accomplish these particular things here. But you're an unprofitable servant, unprofitable in all this, if you do the work and come home and say, yes, I worked. I can come home and say, I did my job. But did you do it for the love of God? If not, you've wasted an entire day that you could have gained merit. You could have added to this treasure in heaven. An entire day has been lost. And if there's merit to be gained by one Hail Mary, how much merit can be gained by a day spent working for the love of God? Understandably, We will not remember that every second of the day. That's why when we get up in the morning, we say that prayer, so that even if I should forget because I'm busy with the work of the day, I haven't given up on that point. I haven't renounced it. From time to time through the day, I can think about it. Years ago, I remember going into this busy executive's office in Southern California, going into his office on the umpteenth floor of this huge building. We're in there talking. He was a good Catholic man. He was just in there talking and about a variety of things and whatever. And as I got up to leave and turned around, I noticed this little plaque on a shelf facing him right there so he could see it every day. And I stopped and looked at it and read it, and he said, "Oh, Father, what I mean by that, that's my morning offering renewal." And here's what it was. "Oh, Lord, I may forget thee this day, but do not thou forget me." All he asked by that was, "My mind may be so occupied by all the things here, don't forget, I love thee, and help me in all my works and labors." That's all he meant by that. That's what he did to keep his mind focused through the day, so he didn't miss out on that merit. Understandably, if we go to work with mumbling and grumbling, if we go to work and do not give our all to accomplish the work that we're doing, if we defraud our neighbor, if we go to school and we cheat and lie and disobey, that labor is totally unprofitable. It actually works against us. It cancels out merit in heaven. Now, the work that we're doing has to at least be good. We can't say our morning offering and say that's going to cover for bad things I do later on in the day. It won't. Because the one that's incompatible with the other. No, our labor is here, that we're here to perform it in that work. And we also need, keep this in mind too, we need to perform it in the state of grace, because we cannot merit if we're not in the state of grace. That's the principle of spirituality. Merit is only given as a reward to those who love. And if we're not in the state of grace, if we're in mortal sin, well, our soul is out of love. There is no love of God there. And so no matter what good we do, and we make our morning offering, it is wasted. The day accomplishes nothing if we're not in that state of grace and perform for that right intention, for the love of God, the good of my neighbor, something of that particular nature. Those are all right intentions. Saint Joseph is our model in the works that we do, the works that we accomplish. St. Pius X, like I said at the beginning of this talk, saw that completely. He fully understood that. That if he proposed St. Joseph and everything from that little snippet from the gospel and what we understand of him being the just man, if we would do all that we should in our labors to work for God, for his honor and glory, the salvation of souls, the good work the church needs to be done to bring people closer to God, even to gain more merit in heaven. All of these are the right intention. All of these are a supernatural motive. That prayer to St. Joseph just helps us to keep those thoughts in mind. That's why I strongly recommend that you add that prayer each day to the morning offering, to keep the mind focused on what to do. The morning offering is there to start the day well, to start it off on the right foot. The prayer to St. Joseph helps us to reformulate in the mind, why am I working? For my own glory or for the glory of God? With order, peace, moderation, and patience, or in disorder, complaint, fraud, deceit, and all those other things that can be done. You know, we'll work one way or the other. The morning offering, that prayer to St. Joseph, really help us to keep the mind focused and focused well. They do not, understand this, they do not take away the difficulty of the labor. They don't. Because what happened to Adam and Eve? Our labor is supposed to be difficult. It's part of that penitential work. But where there is love, there is no labor. When we work for the love of God, we work for these higher motives. We know it's difficult, but it gets us through. And it actually says, I prefer the difficult because it gives me another opportunity to use my talent for God's greater honor and glory and to make reparation for sin. That's the mindset of the Christian laborer. That's the mindset of the one who has a good work ethic. That's the mindset of one who imitates St. Joseph in his labors. Please God, we can do that better each and every day. Let's take a few more minutes now in silent reflection as we finish with this talk.